tomorrow on the programme, the engineer and co-presenter of Cheap Irish Homes, Ciarán McCarthy, will be offering advice on home improvement questions. If you're thinking about adding insulation or replacing windows, improving your B or rating, you might need some advice on what to do with your attic or your hot water tank, that freezing cold box room that you have. If you're wondering what the best home heating system is for your property, then get your questions in for Ciarán on email, and that address is todaycb@rte.ie. Ciarán McCarthy will deal with all those questions tomorrow on the programme. Now though, almost 25,000 ambulance workers across England and Wales are striking today in a dispute with the government over pay. Staggered walkouts are taking place over a 24-hour period, which includes paramedics, call handlers, drivers and technicians, and patients have been told to expect waiting times for 999 calls to be answered. The industrial unrest continues with teachers in secondary schools in Scotland on the picket line today also, and the British government yesterday published its own anti-strike bill. Well, I'm joined on the line by London-based journalist Vincent McAvinney for the very latest. Good morning, Vincent.
Good morning.
So the ambulance staff are out today, not just the drivers, though. As I said, it's right across the board, from the people taking the phone calls to the paramedics and technicians. That's likely to have a huge impact on an NHS under huge pressure.
Yeah, this is much bigger than the strikes in the ambulance service before Christmas, because those were just the paramedics, the ambulance drivers. This is more of the full service. There are still some of the call handlers in offices, but a lot of them are out on the picket lines as well. So this is the largest strike in this service that we've ever seen, so much so that the government, Steve Barclay, the health secretary, are urging people to have common sense today, and the sort of general message of avoiding any kind of high-risk activities.
But then what you hear from the union side is that the government has just not involved itself properly in negotiations at all, that when talks are held, the government side is in the main silent.
Yeah, there's a general pushback from the unions across the board at the moment that they think that the government, which has just introduced new anti-strike legislation, is actually using these strikes. It's that they're happy for them to carry on for a while because they think the public will eventually tire and it will lead to them backing the strike legislation, which they are putting down, which would bring in things like minimum critical services. It would make it harder to strike. But at the moment, the public still seem to be, with everyone struggling with the cost of living crisis and inflation running at over 10%, still supporting the unions despite all of this.
And that anti-strike legislation, or minimum service legislation, how is that being received across the board?
Well, the unions have said that they will mount a robust legal fight to it, willing to go all the way up to the Supreme Court. Labour and the opposition parties are against it. Labour say if they get into power after the next election in 2024, that they will repeal the legislation. And in the House of Lords as well, which it has to get through in Parliament, there is strong opposition to elements of it as well. So the government really will have a fight on its hands if it does try to do this at a time when really they're looking pretty weak as it is.
And in Scotland, the teachers in secondary schools are out today on the picket line. Primary teachers were out yesterday. And there's a ballot underway in England and Wales of teachers too. Is it likely that they'll follow suit?
I think it's very likely that we'll see teachers in the rest of the UK following their Scottish counterparts. Teachers, of course, had a big role to play in the pandemic, having to shift from in-class to teaching from home, having now to do extra work to try and catch up students because, you know, all the schools I've been into in the past 18 months, since we sort of came out of the lockdown periods, they say that in every year you've got children that are, you know, a year or two even behind where they should be. So teachers are having to work extra. There are real pressures on school budgets. There's cutbacks and things like teaching assistants, and a lot of buildings in real disrepair as well. The Conservative government stopped a lot of building works programs when it came in 2010. And that's led to sort of real problems in classrooms. So we are seeing likely, I think, more strikes coming from educators.
And on the transport side then, the unions in the transport sector, they're before the Transport Select Committee in Westminster right now as we speak. I'm watching a screen with that ongoing, and they're saying that they and the government are further away from any resolution than they have ever been.
Yeah, it's been quite an entertaining morning, actually, at this select committee. They say that on a scale of 1 to 10, where are they in terms of getting a deal? And Mick Whelan said, I think you can include 0. We're further away than when we started. And Mick Lynch said, we haven't got an agreement. Until we've got an agreement, we're not even close. And what they accuse the government is of playing is dirty tricks. One, as I mentioned, to prolong these strikes in order to try and create a public argument for new strike legislation, but also trying to sort of undermine the positions of these union leaders. They've accused them of taking orders from Sir Keir Starmer, the Labour leader, which they all laughed at, and saying that they've publicly criticised him for not allowing shadow ministers, for instance, to join picket lines. And they've also really come out and tried to play a pretty strong argument with the public about some of the proposals, including driver-only operated trains. And they say that system was never meant for trains where you've got 9 or 10 carriages over 1,000 people, that it's not safe to operate with just the driver, particularly when you've got a rise in sexual assaults and harassment going on in public transport as well. And I think that's something that a lot of the public are sort of buying into, the fact that just having one driver on the train, if something goes wrong or if something happens to that driver, for instance, if they have a health emergency, it does really impact the people on the train, their safety, but also the lines in general as well.
It's a major decision, Vincent, we know, for any worker to go out on strike. There are many implications for them and for the union that ballots them in the first place. And at that transport committee, the rail union bosses were asked, how long can you carry this on? And what did they say to that?
Well, they've said that they are in it for the long haul, that they can sustain the action for months to come if possible. They continually point out that whilst the rail companies themselves are essentially being indemnified by the government, that they're not losing money. We effectively, after the pandemic, have sort of privatisation again of the railways have gone back basically into public hands, because you've had a reverse privatisation. Everything is being underfunded by the government in order to keep the rail network going. And so the unions have continuously said that, you know, it's our members who are paying the cost here, but we're in it for the long haul because the wider battle must be won. The rail companies aren't losing any money. And when the government's trying to throw out things like the cost to the service, to hospitality industry, those industries have come back and actually taken the sides often of the rail companies and saying that they support the action that they're taking in terms of pay. So the unions seem pretty much to be hunkering down into this position, and they think that the public are still on their side, that they are having a good campaign in the media. Mick Lynch is proving an effective communicator. And that, as I come back to, that over 10% inflation, everyone in the UK at the moment is wanting a pay rise, so they're not really going to criticise them for doing this.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the RMT General Secretary Mick Lynch there, and the anti-strike legislation, which we were just discussing. He highlighted a problem this morning with that if that comes to pass, either he as a union leader or management would have to name the people, the members of staff who are prepared to continue to work to provide this minimum level of service. That in itself is a problem.
Yeah, that would really be a problem. And, you know, you'd go back to the sort of, you know, the scabs in the 1980s, the people in communities in the UK who did cross picket lines, who are still to this day in some communities ostracised, or they're still sort of, they've got a negative reputation from it. So having that kind of naming is something that would be pretty bad in various industries.
And Keir Starmer then, the leader of the Labour Party, and you touched on this a little earlier, he seems to be in a tricky enough position. His first speech of 2023, he said if they come to power that they're not going to be splashing the cash. And he can't make that promise, can he, Vincent? Because the money isn't there for pay rises across the board.
No, the money really isn't there. And Labour, of course, always conscious that the attack that can be most easily made on them is that, you know, in 2010, when they lost, that they had messed up public finances, that they didn't see the global financial crisis coming. The Tories effectively ran a successful smear campaign for years, claiming that it was, you know, Labour and Downing Street that had created a global crisis. So they have to be very careful. They are trying to get the middle ground, the sort of sort of what sometimes called the shy Tory voters, people that often don't like to admit that they did vote Tories at certain elections, but that can be swung by Labour if they do seem more competent. So it is all for Labour in the next 18 months, 2 years, to look like they are financially competent, despite being a party that was set up by unions. They just think, let the unions do their thing. The public seem to support them, and let's hit the anti-strike legislation, and that's the way for us to get back in.
Yes, and they have a very clear position on that, don't they? They're absolutely committed, if that legislation is passed, that they would repeal that, Labour would.
Yeah, they are completely committed to that. But they also think, particularly with the rail, that the public service in the UK has become so, so bad that it needs something pretty revolutionary. And there are a lot of whispers and rumours in MPs that they're going to make some big policy statement when they do put their manifesto out, that they might try and do a huge once-in-a-generational rail reform. We have the highest fares in all of Europe and some of the poorest service. That's something that the union bosses today have said, you know, when the Conservative MP said, you know, you're putting people off travelling on the rail. And they've hit back and said, well, no, because even on normal days, the operators themselves are so poor, these commercial operators, that people aren't wanting to travel on the rail. So I think Labour might think that there's some real grounds to fight the next election on in terms of bringing down costs. And when you think about as well the return to work, you've got huge volumes of people in this country not using rail anymore every day because it's too expensive and they can now work from home. If those prices could be brought down, maybe they'd travel in and that would have wider benefits in the economy. So I think Labour thinks that they've got something here that they could really fight the next election on.
Just coming back to where we started, I mean, clearly what's happening today with the ambulance staff going on strike is going to have a big impact on people and their daily lives. And you mentioned people being told to avoid dangerous situations so that they don't need the service. I was talking to somebody who recently went to London and it took them 2.5 hours on a rail strike day to get from the airport into the centre of the city. How big of an impact are all of these strikes having, Vincent, on daily life?
They are having a huge impact on daily life. It's definitely affecting you when you're trying to travel for occasions or to, you know, see sports events or concerts or things like that. I've heard, you know, lots of people talking about having to travel a day early, travel a different route than they normally would. More people getting in their cars to go places as well because services seem unpredictable. I think people are, you know, pretty worried about getting an injury that might lead you to having to go to hospital because the wait times are, you know, hours and hours and hours at the moment. And particularly if you've got elderly parents or elderly relatives, there is a real worry that if you call an ambulance, if there's a problem, it won't come. If it does come, it'll be parked outside the hospital for hours before they get in. And if they do get in, they're then being treated in corridors. There are sort of genuine fears around hospitals at the moment.
Vincent, thank you very much for taking us through all of that. Vincent McAvinney there, London-based journalist.